My name is Nell Hensey. I'm a writer director from the west of Ireland, currently based in Dublin. I co-wrote Good Ships with Bridget and also directed. I'm kind of generally interested in stories about outsider identities and coming of age themes and female characters. So that's kind of my vibe.
Hi, my name is Bridget Mai-Kang-Leahy. I'm a writer, actor, and producer. I'm originally from Orange County, California, but for the last 9 years, I've been based in Dublin, Ireland, and I am the co-writer and co-producer of Good Ships.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all of. Congratulations to both of you for outstanding work. Good Ships, the short film that you both made, is such a delight to watch and gives so much insight into the world that we here, the Vietnamese American diaspora, often we don't think about, that there's communities of color in a country like Ireland. It's just not on our radar. So bringing that to the world is such a special thing to see.
Yeah, I think it is really unusual for people to think about Vietnamese people settling in Ireland and to have a Vietnamese community that is thriving here. I think I read an article recently that said that Ireland actually, it's projected by like 2025 that one in five people will actually be non-nationals who live here. So Ireland is actually a very diverse place with a lot of diverse stories. So we were so excited to tell one of those stories.
Can you tell me how you both met?
So Bridget and I, we met maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, but we were part of this artist group called Weft Studio, which is run by the Dublin Fringe Festival. And it's specifically for supporting artists of color in the creation of new work and to kind of get to know each other. Cause I think a lot of the times when you are a minority artist in Ireland, it can feel quite isolating. So it's really nice to kind of have a space where we can kind of, we're all in a similar boat, even though we come from like different backgrounds. Like as Bridget said, she's Irish American Vietnamese and I'm half Filipino, half Irish. So even though our like backgrounds aren't necessarily the same, we still have a lot of things in common, and like a lot of the themes and stories we're interested in kind of overlap. So I kind of came up with the initial idea for Good Ships during this program, and then I approached Bridget with the idea, and I also just really loved her work ethic. I loved how she, her approach to storytelling. So it was just a great way for us to start a project together as well.
Can you tell me about the origin of the story and how you came up with it?
Yeah, so I was researching for another project, and RTE, which is like Ireland's national broadcaster, but they also like do a lot of archival stuff. They have a public archive for news footage. So I was looking at this news footage from 1980s Ireland, and I came across this clip that explored the 212 Vietnamese refugees who came over to Ireland in 1979. So they were the first cohort to come over. And the news clip was kind of, it takes place 10 years later, and it was kind of seeing how they were adjusting to like their new lives. And in the news clip, there's an interview with the daughter of this Vietnamese family, and she's just, it was such a character. She had like the thickest North Dublin accent, and she was talking about how she had met her Irish boyfriend, and she was just so charismatic that I was like, oh my God, I just need to write a story about this character. And then it kind of, once Bridget was on board, like it kind of spiraled in terms of like what her parents would be going through, and like the story really branched out then.
It's so random, right, Bridget, that you have somebody who's not of Vietnamese origin finding this story and then finding you to come on board to help write it.
Yeah, it was actually kind of a match made in heaven. So I actually came to Ireland 9 years ago to do a master's degree in public history and cultural heritage. And my research actually focused on the Vietnamese boat people who came here and how they commemorated the Vietnam War in comparison to other diasporic groups. And so I was actually really well aware of that archival footage that Nell had come across as well. I'd seen it many, many times, and it was part of my research. So we were both part of this artist collective. And she's like, hey, I came across this, and approached me. I was like, that's really weird, because I did loads of research on this topic. So it like worked out so, so well.
Talk about match made in heaven, right?
Yeah.
Strange thing. And Nell, this is before, so you had this idea before you met Bridget or after?
It was kind of during that Weft Studio program, which took place over like, I think 3 or 4 months. So like during that time, we all had our own individual projects we were working on. And it was, yeah, just something that kind of came across during it. But like Bridget and I had a few sessions and classes together, so we did know each other, but it was like you say, it was a real match made in heaven. Like I think it was something that was really meant to be, because as well, like Bridget and I just work so well together. Like we, you know, we're just such good friends as well, which is something that like happened during the program as well. So to not only find the perfect project for us to work on, but also to find like the perfect creative partner, which is really, really hard to find, you know, was really special. So yeah, I count my blessings, definitely.
Yeah, I always talk about this theme in the arts and in creative endeavors. It's luck has a lot to do with these things. And, you know, being able to pull into or from the ether these stories and collaborations, it's a strange thing that happens in the world.
Kind of similar to that, I always remember an old mentor of mine kind of talked about like the crossroads of success, and how that is like the crossroads is like between like luck and like good timing, but also preparation and like where you're at as an artist at the time that these opportunities present themselves. And I think it really is kind of fated in that way that Bridget and I, you know, could find each other and had this project. And like, it's still something that's such a big part of our lives now. Like we're still like, we're working on a feature film based off Good Ship. So the journey is not over for us by any means, but it's been a wonderful, wonderful journey. So grateful for it.
Would you both be able to talk a little bit about the Good Ship story without giving away too much? I mean, I don't know how the public generally will be able to view it, but if you could talk a little bit about the actual story itself.
So the story, like Nell said, takes place 10 years after the initial first wave of boat people arrived in Ireland from various refugee camps post Vietnam War. And so, like Nell mentioned, 212 Vietnamese refugees came to Dublin, Ireland in 1979. It was a very small group. Ireland is a very small country. I think the population's like 6 million here, and it would have possibly been smaller back in 1979. Ireland during that period would have been going through a lot of economic turmoil. So I think there was a lot of pressure from the UN for Ireland to take in refugees during that period. But since they were going through an economic crisis, I think they agreed only to a very small amount, which is why the community was so small in Ireland. So the story takes place 10 years after that, and it follows our main character, Tam. And she has grown up in Ireland. She's about like 13 years old. And so, you know, really at the start of adulthood, and she's helping her parents run a Chinese takeaway van. So the Vietnamese in Ireland, especially that particular group, they would have gotten involved in a lot of food businesses. That was something that they were predominantly involved in. So Tam's family, they run Chinese takeaway, and she meets a young Irish boy, and they find out that they have a lot more in common than they initially thought.
How did your family, Nell, arrive in Ireland?
So my mom is from Manila in the Philippines, and my dad is Irish. He grew up in the west of Ireland in a county called Clare, which where I'm originally, where I grew up. And he was working in like agribusiness. So he was working abroad for many years, and he was in the Philippines. And actually, they were both in a scuba diving club, and they met underwater while they were scuba diving. And then yeah, they actually, for the first couple of years of my life, which I don't remember because I was a baby, but we actually traveled quite a lot. So I was born in Norway, actually, which is very, very random. And then we moved to my dad's hometown in Clare when I was about two or three. So yeah, a bit all over the place, but well settled in now.
What was it like for both of you to grow up Asian in Ireland? Because it's predominantly white, and I can't imagine what that experience was like.
I think Bridget and I might have slightly different takes on this, just because Bridget came over during college while I kind of really grew up from as a child. But like I come from a very rural community. I actually live on a sheep farm in the middle of nowhere. So, and I went to an all-girls secondary school, and it was very, very rural, very quite white. But we like I did actually have a lot of like Ennis was quite a diverse town in itself. Like we had a lot of Brazilians, we had a lot of people from Sudan. So I was kind of the only Irish Filipino, but like it was an interesting balance of like Irish and international as well. But actually, so in the secondary school system, you can choose to do this optional year called transition year. And it's kind of a year that's not so academically focused, and you can like you can kind of focus on more practical things. And that's kind of when I started getting into filmmaking, actually. But I remember from transition year onwards, I was the only not fully white Irish person in my year of like 100, maybe 100, 150 people. So that was interesting. But like I don't know, I've always kind of I'm very in touch with my Irish side. Like I do very much consider myself as an Irish person as much as a Filipino. And like for me, I think my journey through my kind of early 20s and stuff is trying to connect more with my Filipino side, which is something that having grown up in this like this a space in a world like rural Ireland is something that I haven't been able to access as much. So that's kind of been my experience so far.
Very
Still
cool.
working on it. Yeah.
And Bridget, what was it like for you 9 years ago when you first arrived in Ireland?
Yeah, so I've spent the majority of my adult life in Ireland. Now I moved here when I was 22. So in a way, I kind of grew up. I grew up in Orange County, where there's Little Saigon. So I was surrounded by Vietnamese culture and Vietnamese restaurants and customs, and my mom's whole family is nearby, and we'd celebrate Tet and Harvest Moon Festival. And so when I first came here, I had a realization that I had taken all of that for granted, because I wasn't surrounded by Vietnamese people any longer, or even Asian people. So when I came here, it was a little interesting for me, because I found myself seeking out the Vietnamese community, and that involved my research as well. So when I decided on my research topic for my master's degree, I started to seek out the Vietnamese community, and I became really good friends with the family who opened one of the first Vietnamese restaurants in Ireland. And my friend Kim, her father, he was one of the original 212 refugees that came over, and they had opened a restaurant here. So I finally had access to pho, and so that helped a lot. But it was, yeah, it was really, really interesting. And my background is Irish, American, Vietnamese. So I came here thinking, I would really get in touch with my Irish heritage, when I actually got a really nice mix of both. I found myself seeking out my Vietnamese side as well.
Fun fact, I had in the early days when I first started my podcast, I interviewed somebody that was the founder of a TV station in Little Saigon TV. And a few years later, I met somebody else who her name is Teresa Meyer Wright, and spoke to both of them. And I didn't realize who they were. I didn't realize their relationships. And then I met you, Bridget, and it all came together. And it's so interesting because the first person was your uncle who owns a little Saigon TV. And then it was your mother. And I couldn't put the pieces together, but realized that they are brothers and sisters. So you come from a long lineage of media people here in Orange County. They're like royalty in Orange County TV media, in the media space. So a shout out to your family.
Don't let my mom hear you say that. It'll go straight to her head. Oh my God.
In terms of living in Ireland, for both of you, what sort of challenges are there in being Vietnamese? Or are there not really challenges like we have in the United States?
The biggest challenge here is that the community is smaller. It's very tight-knit, and I think they support each other a lot. We do support each other a lot. There's an annual Tet celebration. It's in a hotel every year, and it's organized by my friend's family who head the Vietnamese-Irish Association. But I think that the biggest difference is because the community is so much smaller here, you don't get the same like immersion as you would in the United States. You know, you could go to Little Saigon or probably San Jose or Houston and really feel like, oh, I could be in Vietnam right now. So I think like that's one of the biggest differences.
I think as an artist, especially, I find it difficult because with Philippine, I'm not as involved in the Filipino community here. I wish I was, but I think it's just because, you know, I just naturally am more in Irish spaces, and it's something that I'm kind of like trying to unpack a little bit more. But with being a Filipino artist, one thing I struggle with is finding other Filipino artists. That there's very, very, like, I've really struggled to find other ones. And like, I think it was actually during WEF, Bridget, I think when we're like, you know, it was in my mid 20s, the first time I actually met another Filipino artist, and they were US based. So for me, it's always been quite an isolating experience in that way. And it's kind of, I think, made me a bit like anxious about doing Filipino stories, because when you are like, you feel like the only one in, like, it's kind of not a lot, it's a bit of pressure, but it's also kind of like, that's one thing that was really special about Good Ships, I think, is like there was such a sense of community, and like the Vietnamese community were so embracing of the project. Like, they welcomed us into their homes, they fed us, they gave us props, they were behind the camera, they were in front of the camera. And I think that was really, really special. And like, I am working on a Filipino film script at the moment, and I would like to kind of find my people in that sense, but it is something I've found quite difficult up to now. Yeah.
Speaking of difficulty, making a short film in the United States is already a very tough thing to do. It's very difficult for young filmmakers to get the money, find the people. I cannot imagine how difficult it is in Ireland. How did you both manage to pull this off?
Is it easier to make art in the United States, like, versus like Europe? And I would say it's probably easier to make art in Europe than it is in the United States.
Oh, wow.
Because there are a lot more resources and public funding for art that just isn't existent that I know of in the US. So here in Ireland, we have funding bodies such as Screen Ireland and the Arts Council. And we actually got our funding through an award. So we won an award called the Virgin Media Discovers Award, and it's an award that's run in partnership with Virgin Media and Screen Ireland. So we went through a really rigorous process with like an application and then like several rounds, a final pitching, like interview, and then we received the funding. So I would say the support here is a lot more prevalent than it is in the US. You wouldn't get any sort of public funding in the US that I know of.
Yeah, so like just in general, what we've been finding is like European bodies, and in fairness, Ireland is quite good for it. Like there is so much like opportunities in public funding, while it appears that in the US it's all very private based, and it's kind of like it's either micro budgets or like very extreme big Hollywood budgets, and there's not a lot of in between. While in Europe it's kind of more, it's more accessible and it's more mid-range. And in fairness to the Irish industry, in the last few years I've noticed, which has kind of allowed filmmakers like myself and Bridget to kind of prosper a lot more, is that the industry is really focusing a lot more on like diversity and inclusion, and like that they're like the award we won, that was a remit of that scheme. And I think like it's kind of a cliche at this stage, but like the Irish industry, we do kind of punch a lot above our weight considering our population size. And like I think storytelling is kind of inherently a part of who we are. Like it's kind of in our DNAs. Like we're such storytellers at the end of the day, that I think like it's in our culture. And I think in fairness, like a lot of these funding bodies, they do recognize that there is a lot of value that can be brought overseas as well, and like that the Irish industry does do quite well in terms of writing and acting and directing kind of talents. So it is something that they do invest in, and they are supportive of new voices as well, more and more every year, I find.
Well, what a pleasure to hear. I've heard that same sentiment echoing in Canada as well. The Vietnamese Canadian artists speak of money that comes from governments and different bodies that really support the arts. And speaking to the whole Irish storytelling thing, I remember a few years ago, I went to a Damien Rice concert, and the stories within his music was off the charts. It was him and a guitar. And he captivated the audience for 3.5 hours. And I remember in between the songs, there was more storytelling. It was like constantly storytelling. And I've heard this about Irish people. It's a lot of storytelling, and it's just told in ways that are just so warm and unique to Ireland. So I can appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah, there certainly is a strong tradition here. In fact, there are storytelling competitions here. I haven't been to one yet because they're always sold out. Like the tickets are gone in seconds, but you basically go to a pub or like a venue, and just regular people will get up on stage and tell stories, which is so great. So I'm dying to get to one of those.
Yeah, that's what an amazing cultural thing. And, you know, hearing you all say today, there's only 6 million Irish people in Ireland. It's a tiny blip. It's a small country that has so much cultural spread around the world for the last few hundred years. It's amazing to hear. I mean, today we're at 6 million in Ireland, but I can't imagine 20, 30 years ago, there was like far fewer, but made such an impact in the world in cultural storytelling.
Now, Ireland's population would have been a lot greater pre-potato famine, if you're aware of the potato famine, which happened in the 1840s. And then there was a mass exodus and a lot of death. So Ireland has just... As well.
And immigration as well.
Yeah. So Ireland's population is just now rebounding and getting to pre-famine numbers. And like just a note about like how influential Irish art is. If you even look at the Oscars last year and how many Irish artists were nominated and films were nominated. And then alongside as well, you know, we had two Vietnamese people nominated, which was fantastic. So it was a great Oscars for me anyways, both sides of my family.
I think about the difficulty of finding actors in the US to play Vietnamese parts, because oftentimes it's the nuances, especially in the language. And I recognize the actors that you have in your films, the accents were passable. I mean, and very passable to believe that these people, you know, were there in Ireland for about 10 years or so. But I can't, again, imagine how difficult it is to cast people from such a small pool in Ireland. How did that happen?
It was a real experience, definitely, because the acting pool here is very, very white. Like, it's very hard to find. There is very few Asian actors. So to have to find something as specific as like a 13-year-old Vietnamese girl. And we knew from the beginning, it was like this whole project hinges on finding this person, because if she doesn't exist or if we can't find her, then we don't have a story. But Bridget, this is your story. You're the one who found Ellie, really. So I'll let you tell it.
Like Nell mentioned, the acting pool here is very small for Asian actors, myself being one of them. And then finding something so specific as a 13-year-old girl with the ability to do a Dublin accent was going to be impossible. But we worked with a casting director called Anya O'Sullivan, who did call outs, and she got some tapes. There were a handful of Vietnamese actresses, but I actually found Ellie. So about 7 or 8 years ago, I worked at a law firm as a receptionist for the summer.
So random.
So random. And I had remembered that one of my colleagues had said that he had two daughters and they were adopted from Vietnam. So I just sent him a cold email and was like, "Hey, did the math. I think one of your daughters might be the right age. Are they interested in acting?" And he came back and said, "Yes, Ellie is actually in drama classes and she does stage stuff, but she's never done film, and she'd love to tape." And she did an audition for us and was fantastic. And then the little girl in the film who plays her younger sister, Mai, is her sister in real life as well, Una. So Una played her sister in the film as well. So we really, really lucked out. We couldn't believe that we were able to find them. So we were very lucky.
Again, you think about the luck that it involves these two girls, orphans that were adopted. Is that what the story is?
They were adopted from Vietnam, but I'm not entirely sure the.
You're right. I mean, if you think about it, right? They're adopted from Vietnam, and then they get to Ireland, and then grow up a little bit and become actresses in a movie. And it's like mind blowing if you think about where their lives could have been had they not been brought to Ireland. And Ellie does such an amazing job. She's such a natural, and to find somebody like that is like a needle in a haystack for sure.
Yeah. And you know, we're really proud of her as well, because she also won Best Actress of the Viet Film Fest this year. So we're really proud of her and are so happy that her work has been recognized, because she did an amazing job. She's very professional.
Very hardworking as well. And honestly, one of the best actors I've ever worked with. Like, she's just so, even though it was her first film, and like, you know, there was a lot of, like, we did rehearsals with her and Zach, who plays Callum, and it was both of their first films, so they were kind of in it together in a way, which was nice. But just, you know, she was so professional and so on it, because, you know, it's quite a big production to have to carry, and like, she is the lead and there is a responsibility that goes with that. But I think you know, she's so mature and she's so good at what she does. Like, and it's really interesting actually, because people watch the film and they don't realize that actually Zach and Ellie have opposite personalities to their character. So Zach is actually quite like reserved, not reserved, but he's more a little shy maybe, and Ellie is quite outgoing, and you know, but in the film you see them like totally transform, and like Ellie especially is just like, she just totally disappears, and that's, you know, it's such a big transformation for a 13-year-old girl and a young actor to do. And same with Zach, like he's just becomes this kind of very old man kind of charismatic character, but like that just goes to show how great both of them are as actors, that they could really transform in that way. So no, it's great that they're getting the recognition, because they really, really deserve it.
This episode is brought to you by Songkhai Distillery, my only go-to gin company. Established in 2018, Songkhai Distillery is Vietnam's first gin distillery, founded by Daniel Nguyen, a Vietnamese American from Southern California. No matter how many people I have at my parties, we are always pouring Songkhai gin. Songkhai gin is handcrafted in small batches and prioritizes using botanicals and ingredients that are native and heirloom to Vietnam. The result is a product uniquely Vietnamese in taste and aroma. Songkhai is now growing to include rice wine and traditional Vietnamese herbal liqueurs similar to Amaro. Songkhai prides itself in Vietnam, from the farmers who grow the fruits and herbs to the artists behind the artwork and design. Songkhai is a community effort of people who are proud to be Vietnamese and collectively embody the spirit of Vietnam. Well, I mean, let's talk about recognition for both of you. Oftentimes people think of short films, well done, or calling cards for a future career. How has it changed your lives?
This was actually my first film. So I come from an acting background, and I just started getting into writing in the pandemic. So I hadn't had very much experience in like the filmmaking behind the camera part of filmmaking. And so it was really like a great learning experience for me and a real confidence booster. And it was really special to be able to make something that is so meaningful for the Vietnamese diasporic community as well, and to capture that story, especially a story that I had researched so long ago. So I think it started the beginning of a hopefully very long and successful career.
Yeah, it was a very important project for me as well. Like, it was the first time I'd co-written, and Bridget was just like the most amazing collaborator. And like, I love co-writing with Bridget. It's so much easier than co-writing by myself, I find. So, and then, yeah, I think Good Chips, like I had done two shorts before Good Chips. I did kind of an anthology experimental film, which was like six kind of short films. And I was still kind of figuring out who I was as a director. And it took me quite a while to actually want, like, be able to see myself as a director. That was a kind of a big thing for me starting out, was like, because there was a lack of role models who looked like me or came from the same place as I did, that I didn't even though I loved writing for years and years, I never considered directing until the writing kind of did well. And I was like, had to find a director who could relate to those experiences. And I just couldn't. And I was like, it kind of got to a point where like, okay, I need to do it for myself. And I think with Good Chips, it was really the project that really opened up my eyes in terms of what a film can do and what it can be. And it's really kind of, it's definitely the type of stories I want to make. And it was kind of my first kind of more proper mainstream drama. But yeah, just in terms of like working with special talent and telling stories that haven't been told before and showing faces on screen and sharing experiences that haven't been shown before, and how important that is. And representation is something that Bridget and I talk about a lot. But yeah, Good Chips kind of really started the fire there.
I want to get the general sense of what it feels like, because you've been to the United States now recently and have experienced this big community of Vietnamese filmmakers or Asian American filmmakers in basically the central hub of the world, which is LA, Southern California. And I think that there's pros and cons with coming from a small place versus a bigger place like LA. Can you both, and this is for the sake of people, I want to hear this experience for the sake of creatives in smaller locales around the world. What are some of the pros and cons that you think come from being from a smaller place? And Bridget, you can answer both these because you come from both sectors. I would like to hear, what are the pros and cons of coming from a small place versus a big place?
I think it depends on your perspective and how you look at it. For me, it was because I came from, like I said, I came from a very rural community. I'm the first person on either side of my family to do anything remotely creative. Like it's such a new world for all of us. Like I remember growing up, like I hated the things that made me different. And like the fact that people couldn't like figure out where I was from and all this kind of stuff. And I just wanted to be, you know, as you are when you're growing up, you want to just fit in and be like everyone else. But actually what I find now as I grow, and like I think as an artist especially, it's the things that make you different and the things that make you stand out that are actually your greatest strength. And I think coming from a small community and being kind of an outsider, like feeling kind of growing up with imposter syndrome my whole life and feeling like an outsider, it could be looked at as like, oh, this is a very isolating, hard experience. Maybe I'd be better off if I was in a big city and I was surrounded more by more people who were just like me. But actually, I think what it does is it gives you a lot of empathy because you can relate and you can see things from certain perspectives. And I think that's kind of one thing we wanted to do, especially with this film, is like the whole idea is that it's not a film for just Irish people or just Vietnamese people, or, you know, it's about finding common ground with people who don't come from a similar background as you. And like, it's the things that like we have in common and the things that make us different are actually, you know, things that should be celebrated as opposed to seen as a hindrance. So that's kind of my take on it. Yeah.
I guess for me, I came from the big ocean into a small pond, I guess you could say. And, you know, I'm from Orange County and I went to college at UCLA. So I lived in LA for many years before I moved here. And what I will say, moving here, it does feel like there can be more opportunities for me here. But at the same time, there are less opportunities for me here because I actually can very confidently say that I might be the only Asian American actress in all of Ireland, definitely the only Vietnamese American actress in all of Ireland. So, and then as a writer, you know, I think that gives me like a really good starting off point because I'm able to bring a very like worldly or larger perspective to my writing. I have a good understanding of like, you know, American perspectives, Vietnamese perspectives, Irish perspectives. So I have this like, you know, experience to draw from when creating art, which I think has really helped me. And so experiencing the world and then coming to Dublin and bringing that to my art, I think has really helped me. But at the same time, from an acting perspective, I think there are very few roles for me here. And I think there's probably more roles for me in the United States. But as a writer, I think where I came from and all of my life experiences have informed the kind of work that I want to create.
When you think about the work that you do in Ireland, and this is a question for both of you, do you often think that this is a starting point for you and one day you want to get into the bigger picture in Hollywood? Or are you your vision is like, no, we're going to make movies for Ireland and we're going to stay here for the time being and we like what we do here. You know, is there a sort of a trajectory that you all think about in terms of getting more explosive and bigger in a bigger place?
Yeah, it's something actually we've kind of been talking a lot about. I co-founded a production company in the last couple of months, and like our whole kind of ethos we call Pure Diplomat Pictures, and is, you know, it's great to make Irish stories for Irish audiences, and Irish audiences like do appreciate and enjoy them. But as Bridget was talking about with the Oscars last year, like, we know Irish stories can travel. We know that there's an international appetite for them as well. So like, the stories I'd be interested in telling going forwards would have Irish elements to them. But at the same time, it's, again, it's the same with Good Ships. It's like, it's not, it's telling stories that can like go beyond borders. And I think with Ireland, we were talking about like the funding bodies and how it's great to kind of starting out. Like, there's a lot of schemes and public funding that, you know, you can access to make your stuff, but it's quite, on the grand scale of things, it's quite small, the budgets you do get here. So like, you realistically, feature films and TV shows, they need to do co-productions with other companies in order to finance themselves. So whether that's working with UK or like continental Europe or the US and Canada's a big one that we collaborate with a lot. Like, it inherently, your project needs to be kind of internationally focused in order to be able to check the boxes on both ends. So I think for me anyway, I like, my Irish identity and Irish stories are so important, and I am an Irish storyteller first and foremost, and I would like to keep doing that, but with the view of bringing it to international audiences, definitely. Yeah.
I think in terms of storytelling and what kind of stories that like I'm interested in, I am very aware that we're living in an increasingly globalized world where people migrate far more often than maybe we used to, and there's a lot of diversity within communities. Not everyone is, you know, from the same place and has ancestors that go back to like the Vikings or something like that. You know, I think because the world is becoming increasingly more diverse and more globalized, that there probably will be an appetite for stories kind of like similar to mine, you know, growing up in one place, moving to another, marrying someone from another country, having kids grow up in a different culture. I think that's probably a story that would resonate with a lot of people. And so that definitely is in the back of my mind when creating stories. And in terms of going bigger and going to like, quote unquote, Hollywood and the United States, I think naturally I would like to progress there. I have an American passport, so I might as well use it. And so yeah, I would certainly be interested in working on American projects going forward, or even British productions or Canadian productions. I think there's certainly room to grow and to collaborate internationally.
Here's a question that may sound random and out of left field, but I'm going to go for it. because I am a big fan of Conor McGregor from MMA, the UFC. And I bring him up because he, to me, is an Irish export. And he has made it a real big name in the United States, whether it's his fighting, his whiskey. He's brought this sort of sensibility that he put Ireland on the map in terms of the storytelling. Again, goes back to his genius for storytelling. I think he's where he's at. And for people who don't know who Conor McGregor is, he's an MMA fighter, a very good fighter, very popular here in the United States. And I think about him in terms of what we see here in the US, but as Irish people, are you aware of Conor McGregor? And are you aware of how real he is in Ireland versus what he is portraying in the bigger world? Do you both follow who he is or know anything about Conor McGregor?
Ireland would know Conor McGregor quite well. I'm not an MMA, I don't follow MMA, but it's, yeah, I think it's just, it kind of, that Conor in a way is like an extension of the idea that like, there is just such a strong sense of character with Irish people that like you even see it with like actors now, like Barry Keoghan and like Paul Mescal and like just all these in all these different fields that there is such a strong Irish presence. And like, I think there is something that I think resonates with like non-Irish people. I don't know. There's like some, I don't know if it's just the charisma or it's charisma, just the storytelling,
just
but there
say.
is like, yeah. And there's also kind of, I can't really put my finger on it, Bridget, but if you want to jump in.
You couldn't bring up like Colin Farrell or like Enya or I don't know, some other famous Irish person. Like,
I'm leading to something
MMA.
Here. Yeah, I'm leading to, I'm going somewhere with this.
I wouldn't know much about MMA. Conor McGregor, like Nell says, is a real, distinct personality. And I think one of the reasons why he probably does well, particularly in the United States, is because there is such a strong Irish American community in the United States. I think Irish Americans kind of have this desire to feel connected to the homeland. And so, you know, someone with his personality, or any Irish person in any kind of athletic or artistic field, it's an easy person to root for because a lot of Americans claim Irish heritage.
I bring him up, and it was a random thought because we were talking in that direction. I bring him up because he's a brandable export from Ireland. And I think about Vietnamese or even Filipino. You know, I think for the Filipino, there's a real clear brandable export in the U.S. when we think about Filipinos, very talented with music, very talented with dancing. And I think about the Vietnamese, and I'm still searching for what that brandable export trait is. When we think about Conor McGregor, we think about this boisterous, flamboyant, charismatic, highly charismatic person. He's won and lost a lot of fights. But what we always remember is there's something about his Irishness that comes to the screen. And I'm wondering, as both of you are of mixed heritage, you know, over the years, is this something that will be lost? I think, Nell, you identify more as an Irish person. But, you know, for Bridget, you're Vietnamese, Irish, American, all these three things. What will happen when multiple cultures come together to be exported into the world? I think about that very often when Vietnamese and another culture come together. Will it be watered down, or what kind of beauty comes from this? And I really bank on the idea of there's a beautiful narrative that comes from the blending of cultures as well. So I'd get like to get your thoughts on sort of a brandable export culturally coming from Ireland, from mixed heritages.
I'm going to put on my history hat for a moment. So I've studied history 2 degrees. So this is just my theory. So Irish Americans, I think, have this idea of what Ireland is. And it's kind of a caricature version of Ireland, you know, like leprechauns and pots of gold and like green fields and sheep and kind like the old country, which is definitely not true of Ireland today. Ireland's a very modern country and very diverse and very technologically advanced. So I think, you know, the big wave of Irish people that came to the United States, now this is, I have absolutely nothing to back up. This is just my like hypothesis. I think because the large group of immigration that came to the United States was in the late 19th century, you've had multiple generations to establish themselves in the United States. And like, as you become more and more quote unquote American, there's this desire to hold on to a culture, and that culture becomes more and more of like a caricature of itself. Like you hold on to things that become like St. Patrick's Day. You know, you there's certain very visible things that are cultural identifiers, and because you have those multiple generations establishing themselves, they are then able to create art to interpret that. And I think the Vietnamese, because it's only our parents who have just immigrated, it's they came to the United States to survive in order for us to thrive. And so it's like my generation and maybe my kids' generations that are going to start making art that really will begin to, you know, inspect like what it means to be Vietnamese. And I think maybe we'll see in the future generations something coming out of that. And I don't really know what it is, but that's kind of my like theory that I've developed. So a bit complicated, but
yeah, we're like a copy of a copy of a copy when you get down to the generations that commemorate what they thought were, you know, identifiers of the cultural, the homeland signifiers, right?
Yeah, it's a bit like fixed in time or something. I think like I was having a conversation with a producer here, a theatrical producer, and we were kind of talking about how Irish American theater seems to be stuck in the potato famine. And I suppose maybe with the Vietnamese, you could kind of say the same thing. Like a lot of our art is based off of like the Vietnam War and our parents' experiences as like refugees. So I think it will take some time to make further art and tell more stories that aren't fixated on that point in time.
I was having to think about it. Yeah, it's a very interesting question. I think I can only really speak from my own experience, but I think there's certain things of when we talk about intergenerations and how culture kind of goes through the different generations. Like there's certain things that I think will definitely live on. Like I, for me and my Filipino heritage, it's like food. And like, actually my mom came to live with me for about a week last week because we kind of had a Filipino immersive week where we watched a bunch of Filipino films and listened to music, and she cooked all these Filipino dishes. And it's meant to, I'm trying to say it's going to help me write my feature film, but I also just wanted her to cook for me for a week. So, but it was like, I think that's something that's very accessible regardless of like food. And it was actually something we really noticed when we were at the Viet Film Festival. Like so many of the films, food is such like a big thing to connect over among cultures, and even if, because language I think is something that I think is the toughest thing to carry over. Like I try to speak Tagalog with my mom, but because it's only her, it's and I speak English, you know, otherwise, and even here in Ireland, like we don't speak Irish as a nation really. Like there are certain areas called the Gaeltachts where like they would speak Irish, but like it's really a dying language. And I think that's possibly the saddest thing about as we move through the different generations. But I think that there is then like there's food and there's music and there's other ways to kind of connect and explore your culture that will live on, or that are easier to pass on as we do become a more globalized society, I suppose.
I have a few more questions, but I want to return back to the 212 Vietnamese. Is there an organized community of that Vietnamese sort of like that wave, or are there, you know, a bigger community with subsequent waves?
There is a bigger community with subsequent waves. I can't give you an exact figure, but I do think there's a few thousand Vietnamese in Ireland and from immigration from that point. And the community is led by, there's a Vietnamese Irish Association, And so I know they have a strong, close-knit, like group that come together to celebrate Vietnamese holidays and things like that. But yes, the community has grown since that period.
What future collaborations can we expect from both of you? And is there another collaboration with you both?
Yeah, so as we kind of mentioned, we're writing a feature film version of Good Chips. Even from the beginning, when we kind of was first talking about the story, we felt that there was so much more to the world and so much more to the characters that we couldn't explore. You know, we were so limited by 15 minutes or whatever, you know, the short format was. And actually, when we were in the initial development process, there was a lot of things we had to drop that we really, really liked, and we really felt like, oh, I'd love to explore this a bit more. So we're kind of our kind of catchphrase is like, oh, we'll save it for the feature. So now we're actually writing the feature, and it's yeah, it's, you know, we like Bridget and I, we haven't made a feature film yet, but it's something that we're very adamant about doing it. But I mean, so far so good. It's a long process. Obviously, you know, it's not going to be like the shorts where we turn it around in a year or two. It's kind of in it for the long haul. But I think just the fact that we're still so excited by it just goes to show that it's worth doing. And every like we've taken the film so many places now. We were in Paris there. We were up in Belfast in Northern Ireland, and like every screening we went to, there was a question or someone came up to us and they were like, is there going to be more? Like, would love to see a feature. So I think the audience response to the short has been really encouraging in that way. So yes, we will continue to work together
One
on
quick inherent problem that I want to ask and explore is the characters will grow up in the next 2 years or so. Is that going to be an issue with using the same characters, using the same actors?
it. It all depends. It like you never, it's kind of like asking how long is a piece of string. Like we don't know. I mean, we love the cast that we had for Good Chips, and like that's kind of a reason why we are very much diving in now and trying to get it off the ground as quick as we can. But it's factors beyond our control, really, like to find finance and all that. So it all kind of depends.
What Nell said, making a feature film is a very long process. So there's just so many factors that are beyond our control.
Once again, congratulations on a job very well done. And I look forward to work that you both put out together or individually. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thanks for having us, Kenneth.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.